text number 2. So, chapter 18, text 1. I'll just read the English. It's a long prose text. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, Bhadrasrava, the son of Dharmaraj, rules the tract of land known as Bhadrashva Varsha. Just as Lord Shiva worships Sankarshan in Ilavrita Varsha, Bhadrasrava, accompanied by his intimate servants, and all the residents of the land worship the plenary expansion of Vasudev, known as Hayashirsha, also known as Hayagriva. Lord Hayashirsha is very dear to the devotees, and he is the director of all religious principles. Fixed in the topmost trance, Bhadrasrava and his associates offer their respectful obeisances to the Lord and chant the following prayers with careful pronunciation. So we'll try to do the same. Text 2. Bhadrasravasa Uchuhu Om Namo Bhagavate Dharmayatma Vishodhanaya Nama Iti Bhadrasravasa Uchuhu Om Namo Bhagavate Dharmayatma Vishodhanaya Nama Iti. Bhadrasravasa Uchuhu Om Namo Bhagavate Dharmayatma Vishodhanaya Nama Iti. Bhadrasravasa Uchuhu Om Namo Bhagavate Dharmayatma Vishodhanaya Nama Iti. Bhadrasravasa Uchuhu Om Namo Bhagavate Dharmayatma Vishodhanaya Nama Iti. Om Namo Bhagavate Dharmayatma Vishodhanaya Nama Iti. Rasavasa Uchuhu. Bhadrasravasa Uchuhu Namo Bhagavate Dharmayatma Vishodhanaya Namati. Bhadrasravasa Uchuhu Om Namo Bhagavate Dharmayatma Vishodhanaya Nama Iti. Ladies? Okay. Bhadrasravasa Uchuhu. Om Namo Bhagavate Dharmayatma Vishodhanaya Nama Iti. Bhadrasravasa Uchuhu Om Namo Bhagavate Dharmayatma Vishodhanaya Namati. Bhadrasravasaha uchuhu. The ruler, Bhadrasrava, and his intimate associates said, Om, O Lord, Namaha, respectful obeisances, Bhagavate, and to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Dharmaya, the source of all religious principles, Atma Visholdanaya, who purifies us of material contamination. Namaha, or obeisances. Iti, thus. Translation. The ruler, Bhadrasrava, and his intimate associates, utter the following prayer. We offer our respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the reservoir of all religious principles, who cleanses the heart of the conditioned soul in this material world. Again and again we offer our respectful obeisances unto him. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Foolish, materialistic persons do not know how they are being controlled and punished at every step by the laws of nature. They think they are very happy in the conditioned state of material life, not knowing the purpose of repeated birth, death, old age, and disease. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita 7:15, Lord Krishna describes such materialistic persons as mudhas, rascals. Namam duskritino mudha prapadyante naradama. These mudhas do not know that if they want to purify themselves, they must worship Lord Vasudev Krishna by performing penances and austerities. This purification is the aim of human life. This life is not meant for blind indulgence and sense gratification. In the human form, the living entity must engage himself in Krishna consciousness to purify his existence. Tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam shuddhyet. This is the instruction of King Rishabhadev to his sons. In the human form of life, one must undergo all kinds of austerities to purify his existence. Yasmad brahma sokyam tunantam. We are all seeking happiness, but because of our ignorance and foolishness, we cannot know what unobstructed happiness really is. Unobstructed happiness is called brahma sokya, spiritual happiness. Although we may get some so-called happiness in this material world, that happiness is temporary. The foolish materialists cannot understand this. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj points out, Maya sukaya baram udvahato vimudhan. Merely for temporary materialistic happiness, these rascals are making huge arrangements, and thus they are baffled life after life. So I'll read the verse again. The ruler, Bhadrasrava, and his intimate associates utter the following prayer. We offer our respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the reservoir of all religious principles, who cleanses the heart of the conditioned soul in this material world. Again and again we offer our respectful obeisances unto him. So the point Prabhupada wishes to discuss here is Krishna's name, Dharmat, dharmaya atma vishodhana. Atma vishodhana purifies us of material contamination through the religious principles of which he is the source. So from this we see that this is the business of the Lord. He propagates religious principles for the purpose of purifying the conditioned soul. So Prabhupada comments on this. Foolish materialistic persons do not know how they are being controlled and punished at every step by the laws of nature. They think they are very happy in the conditioned state of material life, not knowing the purpose of repeated birth, death, old age, and disease. Therefore, they are called mudhas. Now, the literal meaning of this word mudha means dull, stupid, unconscious, silly, foolish, idiotic. It comes from the root mu, verbal root M-U-H, meaning to be bewildered or to fall unconscious. Muyanti, they're bewildered. Even the demigods are muyanti there. So, mudha, this means you don't know what's going on around you. You don't know what's happening here. So therefore, they're called foolish. Because they don't know how they're being controlled and punished at every step by the laws of nature. And he says, they think they are very happy, but they don't know the purpose of repeated birth, death, old age, and disease. So this is something to meditate on. In fact, Prabhupada has a number of meditations on this topic, which bring out this foolishness. Because you may ask, how can a person be deluded? Either he's happy or he's not. How can he be deluded about his own condition? It's like a report. If I say I see a red drum, I may be deluded. There may not be any red drum, but on the other hand, if I report that I see red, about that, how can I be deluded? If I'm simply being truthful, this is something we discuss in philosophy a lot. In other words, you know, your own immediate sense perceptions is what you have, so I may be deluded about what's out there, but I can't. So people feel like that about happiness. It's either, you know, you feel good or you feel bad. And if a person is feeling good, and you go and tell them you're not feeling good, they think you're foolish. When I was a new devotee, I was trying to explain somebody about the miseries of the material world. Are you trying to tell me I'm not happy? Who are you to tell me I'm not happy? Like it's an intrusion on his own. You know, I know whether I'm happy or not. They say like that. So sometimes we find ourselves, and I remember this New Yorker cartoon from several years ago. There's a drunk lying in a gutter, you know, just flat out, you know. And he's kind of looking up and staring down at him is this very stern lady from the Salvation Army. And he's smiling up at her, you know, his eyes, he's got little X's for his pupils, you know, he's just like bonked out. And he's got this grin, you know, from one side of his mouth to the other. And the lady from the Salvation Army is saying, unhappy man! He's obviously very happy, right? Like... So sometimes you feel like that. How can we report to these people that they are unhappy? Well, a couple of things. First of all, actually they don't give an honest report. there's a certain amount of self-deception involved. And second of all, they've got a kind of counterfeit happiness. You will say it's happiness, but because you don't know any better, you've got these substitutes. So the dishonesty is there because people are after being happy so badly that they have to convince themselves they're successful. So therefore what they get is symbolic happiness. The culture will decree that certain things are symbols of happiness. A nice house, a nice car, worthwhile social status. And anyone who has these things are happy. So a person will simply, on the basis of deduction, anyone who has these things are happy, I have these things, therefore I'm happy. And they do like that. They don't consult their own feelings in this matter. They can't do it, because after having invested 20, 30, 40 years gaining these little things that are the symbols of happiness and find out that there's nothing to them, they don't want to engage in confront the further unhappiness that I'm a failure. And that having gone all these things, and usually what they do at that point is take to intoxicants. It's like the unhappy man in the gutter. There's another form of unhappiness, intoxicants. It's misery, actually. Although you get this is an example of illusory happiness that comes from intoxicants. Actually, people who are addicted to intoxicants, most of them want very badly not to be, or would like not to be. And it's basically a form of suicide. In other words, it's obliteration of consciousness. The consciousness of pain is so great that if you can obliterate that consciousness of pain for a little bit, then you're happy. So therefore, the standard of happiness becomes, as they say, feeling no pain. So you think, well, that's happiness. So these little pitiful things become happiness. So Prabhupada has given some descriptions here. He's quoted a couple of verses in the purports, in this purport. And his purports to those verses are really classical descriptions of this stupidity, this dullness of people living in such a way that's completely miserable yet thinking, oh, this is all right, I'm happy. Well, here's the verse to Lord Rishabhadev where he recommends Tapo Divyam. I'll read that translation of that verse. He says, my dear sons, of all living entities who accepted material bodies in this world, one who has been awarded this human form of life should not work hard day and night simply for sense gratification, which is available even for dogs and hogs that eat stool. You have to do so much for what's available for the stool eaters. One should engage in penance and austerity to attain the divine position of devotional service. By such activity, one's heart is purified, and when one attains this position, he attains eternal blissful life, which is transcendental to material happiness and which continues forever. This Brahma Sokyam, Tvanantanam, it's eternal. So here Prabhupada says, devoid of Krishna consciousness, every living being suffers in this cycle of birth and death perpetually. To relieve them from this bondage and enable them to become blissful and happy, bhakti yoga should be taught. A foolish civilization neglects to teach people how to rise to the platform of bhakti yoga. Without Krishna consciousness, a person is no better than a hog or dog. The instructions of Rishabhadev are very essential at the present moment. People are being educated and trained to work very hard for sense gratification, and there is no sublime aim in life. People's consciousness is way down there. They have no idea that they have any great purpose to fulfill, any mission, any achievement to make. Just get through and grab a little sense gratification. So he describes this, how they're trained to work very hard for sense gratification. A man travels to earn his livelihood, leaving home early in the morning, catching a local train, and being packed in a compartment. He has to stand for an hour or two in order to reach his place of business. Then again, he takes a bus to get to the office. At the office, he works hard from 9 to 5. Then he takes 2 or 3 hours to return home. So he gets home 7, 8 o'clock. Remember, he's left about 6 in the morning. After eating, he has sex and goes to sleep. For all this hardship, his only happiness is a little sex. all this civilization, you know, high-speed trains, suburban lines, cities, office buildings, tall towers, you know. So this is how a person can live, huh? Oh, the whole, a little sex. But that's available in the pigsty, huh? And actually, it's easier, as he says here. Rishabhadev clearly states that human life is not meant for this kind of existence, which is enjoyed even by dogs and hogs. Indeed, dogs and hogs do not have to work so hard for sex. Somehow or other, they get it easier than the modern commuter here. So because people are thinking that this is a nice life, and this is what human life is for, they're called mudha, dull, stupid, unintelligent. So again, when Prahlad Maharaj, in a very nice verse, he says that his mission as a devotee is to save these mudhas, they who are involved in maya sukaya, maya sukha. Sukha means happiness, maya means illusory happiness. Prabhupada was lecturing on these verses once. He described maya sukha as the illusory advancement of civilization. Remember that in New York? He gave these series of lectures and talked about it. Huh? Humbug, yeah. Humbug civilization. Yeah, the illusory advancement of civilization. And explain that it looks like you're getting somewhere, but you're really not. There is no advancement. And he described that everybody has automobiles, but now your friends live 50, 100 miles away. Formerly, they lived next door. Now they lived 100 miles away. So where's the advancement? Actually, it just becomes worse. So Prahlad Maharaj is addressing Nisringadev. He says, "O best of the great personalities, I'm not at all afraid of material existence. For wherever I stay, I am fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. My concern is only for those fools and rascals," this word vimudhan, mudha with a little intensifier V in the front, vimudhan, "fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, society, and countries. I am simply concerned with love for them." So Prabhupada discusses this. Throughout the entire world, everyone is making big, big plans to adjust the miseries of the material world. And this is true at present, in the past, and in the future. So this is devastating what he's saying, first of all. We see that big plans are being made everywhere. Every day governments are meeting, congressmen are going to Congress, lobbyists are reporting,
everyone, the amount of money, energy, and expense is going into this, making big, big plans. To do what? He says, to adjust the miseries of the material world. You're really just moving the miseries around from place to place. And he says, this is true at present, in the past, and in the future. This has always been going on and always will be going on. In other words, there's no such thing as progress. This is part of the foolishness that people are thinking we're making progress. Nonetheless, although they make elaborate political, social, and cultural plans, they have all been described herein as vimudha, fools. The material world has been described in Bhagavad Gita as dukkalayam ashasvatam, temporary and miserable. But these fools are trying to turn this material world into sukkalayam, a place of happiness. Not knowing how everything acts by the arrangement of material nature, which works in her own way. So that's the thing. You're going to somehow or other manipulate material nature. See, this is Krishna's certification, dukkalayam ashasvatam. It's temporary and miserable. He made it. That's how it's made. He should know. And that's the way it is. It always will be, always has been, is now. Dukkalayam ashasvatam. But still, here they're trying, because they're trying to turn it into something else, vimudha, they're fools. And here he quotes again the same word, vimudha, prakriti kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. He said, they don't know this. Spirit soul who is ahankara vimudhatma, who's been befooled by ahankara, false ego. That's what fools him. Ahankara vimudhatma. He thinks that he's the doer of activity. He says, kartaham, I am the doer. That is, I am, causing material nature to do this, to do that. But actually, they're working under, everyone is working under the control of this prakriti, this material nature. It's controlling everyone. So everyone is controlled by material nature, but under the false ego, they think, I am the doer, I am controlling it, I am making it happy. So he says here, there's a plan for material nature, personally known as Durga, to punish the demons. This is the problem. Although the asuras, the godless demons, struggle for existence, they are directly attacked by the goddess Durga, who is well equipped with 10 hands with different types of weapons to punish them. You've seen Durga. She rides a lion, which represents the modes of passion and ignorance, Prabhupada says here. And she has 10 arms, very, very strong, each one some weapon or another. And under the lion's paw, you'll see that there's a poor materialist down there. And specifically, this trident is jabbing him. Trident means 3 modes of material nature. That's the way it goes, huh? Everyone struggles very hard to fight through the modes of passion and ignorance and conquer material nature, but at the end, everyone is vanquished by nature's laws. And that's the way it goes. At the time of death, they haven't conquered death at all. And one cannot surpass the stringent law of material nature except by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. That's the only way out. That is the only way out. Nonetheless, although the materialists are baffled in their plans, they try again and again to become happy in this material world. They never give up. They are unable to learn from experience. Therefore, they have been described as vimudha, first-class fools, not just mudas, but vimudas. So that we should have, we should see, you know, this idiocy. We should be very clear about the monumental stupidity of people in this material world, how they go on. And all the data keeps coming in. While I was on a taking a trip recently, I picked up a New Yorker magazine, for example. And in there, there's a first of a three-part series concerning the magnetic fields that are generated by electric wires. Electricity generates electrical field, and also there's a magnetic field wherever electricity flows. So starting in the early 70s, one researcher started in Denver, started coordinating a kind of a freelance researcher, actually. She had a PhD or something, but nobody was funding it. She was doing a study on children dying of leukemia, right, in the Denver area, going from house to house and trying to see what environmental patterns there were. And finally something dawned in her mind that she'd go to these houses where these children had died of leukemia, and so many times she'd see these big transformers up nearby, you know, where they step down the current. So then she started studying and looking at the studying which kinds of wires and how much current they carry, and she found out it wasn't just where there were transformers, but main wires and branch wires. Anyway, she found out that there was a very high correlation between children leukemia deaths and certain kinds of transformers and certain kinds of electricity that's being carried, you know, past people's backyards and being so many feet next to these kinds of wires. So she published this study in the middle 70s in a very respectable journal of epidemiological something, anyway, very respectable journal, expecting everybody would jump all over it and want to do corroborating research, because she just found out that, you know, that when human beings were exposed to these magnetic, because she discovered it wasn't the electricity, but it was the magnetic field. So anyway, to make a long story short, nothing happened, it's like. But then gradually, over the course of the next few years, it turned out here and there people were discovering the same thing in different ways. Somebody had exposed rats to electric fields. And meanwhile, the Navy was interested in burying some kind of gigantic underground low-frequency antenna that would cover, you know, hundreds of square miles to communicate with submarines through the earth, the bedrock of the earth. And so that created some concern about the health effects. And then somewhere else, some electric power company wanted to run high-tension wires somewhere. So one thing led to another, and all this research began to get together, and, you know, there was this huge body of evidence that people exposed to magnetic fields by electrical wires develop high rates of cancer. Apparently, the magnetic field suppresses the immune system. And but in spite of this huge body of data, between the Navy and the electrical power companies, you know, everybody's keeping a lid on it and just trying to personally attacking. These couple of people who did research on this for the Veterans Hospital lost their jobs, even though they'd been given so many awards previously and everything like this. So basically the feeling is that so much is at stake at having these electric wires going everywhere that, you know, the deaths from leukemia and other things, you know, they just have to be accepted. Well, here's, you know, in order to have your toes pop up, you got to have your child die of leukemia. And that's the price you pay. This is called Maya Sukha. That you have your toes pop up and your you know, whatever, all the your hair dryers and your electric drills and everything, a whole thing running electricity. But you just have to understand that a certain number of people are going to die all the time of cancer and other forms of leukemia. It's a trade-off. So the miseries are not being decreased. They're being transferred. So now you have so many conveniences, but you have this inconvenience of such a huge death rate from these different kinds of diseases. This is called illusory advancement. There was a book actually published when I was still in college that I read called The Mirage of Health, which was by a physician who's working for the UN, who claimed that what happened is that progress in medical science has not eliminated disease at all. What it's done is that actually what happens, because social conditions have changed, people are not dying from typhoid, typhus, smallpox, diphtheria anymore. Now they're dying from cancer and heart disease. That's been the advancement in medical science. So you can see, this is called Maya Sukha. The documentation is there. So much energy is being placed. I mean, if you understand how much money and effort is going into alleviating, you know, these things, just reading this article in the New Yorker about how many commissions were meeting, how many experts were retained, how many lobbying groups for the electrical power industry were going to Washington, talking to how many senators, and all these people travel first class. How much money is being spent to subsidize them, give them, you know, their expert rate of expert advice, you know, the huge thing. All of this being done just to increase or continue the miseries of civilization. It's a useless waste of energy. Everything. All useless. Because the result is people will not enjoy any actually happiness. Whatever happens, birth, death, old age, disease is going to be there. It's simply going to be there. But because they're vamudhas, they don't mind keep trying over and over and over. And this is stupidity. It's just like you see somebody puts his hand in fire and gets burnt, and then he comes back and does it again, and comes back and does it again. You realize you have a basket case in your hands, a mental basket case. The whole material civilization is like this. It's stupidity. Why? Where does this stupidity come from? It comes from being averse to the service of Krishna. Better to rule in heaven and hell than to serve in heaven. Really, that's what it is. But they think, they got this idea, this obsession. You know, because you find stupid people like this who don't learn from experience. They have a fixed idea. You know, they have a fixed idea, an obsession. They had, you know, and that they're into that, and no amount of experience, disconfirming evidence, suffering is going to allay them. They always find some way to, you know. So it amounts to insanity. That's also vimudhas, the mode of ignorance. So everyone is basically, this craziness of material civilization is going on. And because the only thing that's going to call, all they want is to become free from the insult and injury of the modes of material nature. That's what they want. And somehow or other they think that they're going to grab control. You know, either they're going to manipulate some demigods to force them, you know, or else they're going to have material science. Some system is always there by which they're going to manage things so that there's to be staved off. No, it won't work. Yeah. And so their actual happiness, this little chapala sukham, this little drop after a day of hell, a little bit of, you know, how much? 10 seconds? 12 seconds? Sex pleasure. 12 seconds. You know, and for all that birth, death, old age, and disease, for that, and the biggest component of that pleasure is thinking, now I'm having sex. Now I'm enjoying. You know. So you have to feel sorry for these people. And actually, it's heartbreaking. It's actually heartbreaking that this whole stupidity is going on over and over and over again. And people have a human form of life through which so much sublime things could be accomplished, and they're just going on and on and on. So a devotee wants to relieve these people. So you should have some respect for the power of the deluding potency that can turn such intelligent, cultured people into such idiots, you know, as to think that they're going to achieve something like this, something actually worthwhile. So they set up very complicated, systematic delusional systems, you know, by which they can achieve things or claim to have achieved something wonderful. You know, I always think of once when I was going door to door. I don't think I was selling Prabhupada. This is before. I think I was selling encyclopedias for a brief period. I went to this guy's house who had, you know, his bowling trophies on one wall. And I could understand, you know, even then. That's because he came from a different, you know, social class than I did. So I could see through his bowling trophies, although my own class had its own equivalent of bowling trophies on a wall, you know, by which people give their lives ultimate meaning and significance. But it's just stupidity, you know. So there's so many stupidities, you know. Like if you go into some people, I've been at other people's houses, and they have pictures on the wall of them shaking hands with important people. This politician, Nancy and I enjoyed your visit so much, you know, and there it is. So they have these little rooms they go into where they can look at and then understand, yes, I'm something, I'm important, I've done things, you know. But meanwhile, birth, death, old age, disease go on. So these systems of systematic delusion, they're all set into place, you know. And they have banquets where they award each other awards and give each other titles and positions, and then everyone thinks, yes, now we're important, now we've made it, now we've conquered birth, death, old age, and disease, you know. But it's all mental. It's not based on reality. Therefore, it's illusory happiness. Illusory means it will come to, there's a day of reckoning. There's a day of reckoning at the time of death, when all illusions become stripped away and you understand, oh, it was illusory happiness. See, it's gone. If it comes in and goes, it's illusory. If it abides forever, it's real. So the real thing is available. We should take it ourselves and have some pity on people and try to give it to others. Yeah. I'll stop there. Any comments, questions? Yeah. Well, because one should understand that we should understand we've taken up this business. Our business is tuple divyam. The only thing that makes us any different from any other society is this dedication, tuple divyam, for self-realization. And therefore, we have to be dedicated to the process of increasing self-realization, which means decreasing sense gratification. Therefore, we have to make all plans. How am I going to eliminate all sense gratification in my life? So all this other stuff is just adjusting sense gratification. Yeah. That's all. You have to be able to see sense gratification when it comes in. It's actually not spiritual. Devotees may do it, but it's not Krishna consciousness, you know. It's because of, you know, weakness of heart. As a certain weakness of heart. Actually, it's lack of faith. That's also there. because Lord Chaitanya defined faith for us is that conviction by attaining Krishna consciousness, all of the things will automatically be attained. So we think that actually if I become Krishna conscious still, what about this, what about that, what about this? This is a weakness, infirmity of heart, is lack of faith. So if I lack faith, how do I get faith? I should associate with people that have it. Because a gift from devotees, this faith in Krishna consciousness. And then you practice Krishna consciousness.